Hello and welcome to Brain Trust Live number 152.
This week on the podcast, Bernie Sanders gives Brent the best birthday present a boy could ever ask for.
A message to the police. Please stop killing unarmed black people. Coming up with funny headlines for those stories is impossible.
In a very Los Angeles move, Ted Cruz would totally protest Loretta Lynch's appointment if he didn't have better plans.
A war of the signs breaks out outside of the Supreme Court. Also, something is going on inside there.
Washington commences the yearly summit between famous comedians and the people they make awkward jokes about.
And Bruce Jenner comes out as a Republican gun owner? Judgment.
We'll have all this and more.
This is Brain Trust Live. Hey guys, I'm Brent.
I'm Lila, and you can find us on the web at www.braintrustlive.com.
That's right.
Happy belated Earth Day.
That's right.
Happy early almost birthday to Brent.
Yes.
His birthday is this Thursday.
It's Thursday.
And guess what present he gets?
Yes!
A Bernie Sanders presidential candidacy.
That's right. He's announcing on Thursday. It's like he knew. I can wear my Bernie Sanders 2016 shirt unironically now.
Finally.
It's perfect.
The moment you've been waiting for. The unironic Bernie Sanders presidential t-shirt moment.
It's like the shirt that I wear all the time that really gets sort of like the point and laugh. And now
it's gonna get the serious stare.
It's not. Nope. Still probably. It's still going to get the point and laugh. But you know what? Fuck them.
You know what? Now we have a primary, at least.
That's right.
We have a primary on our hands.
We have two people running for the Democratic nomination right now.
Two?
Well, we had two. Lincoln Chafee was running. Right. I forgot.
That doesn't count.
Doesn't count.
Lincoln Chafee's a Republican.
We had one and a half persons.
And now we're up to two and a half.
That's right.
One being an American hero, the other being Hillary Clinton, and one half
being
person being Lincoln Chafee, a Republican.
Right.
But so this is, my personal read on this is that Bernie Sanders was like, oh shit, Liz Warren really isn't going to run. And then was like, I got to get in the race now.
Well, and I think a lot of people are going to be like, oh shit, Elizabeth Warren isn't running. Now what do I do? And this is the answer.
This is the answer, guys.
You know,
this is it.
I got more excited about this than I thought I was going to. And I knew that he was probably going to do it anyway. Like,
yeah,
this was like a real moment where I like
had...
It was the
kind of shock where you're not even shocked, but you're just shocked by your own excitement about this shock.
I immediately went and donated.
Yeah, Brent's already donated. Brent's been ahead of us for a while. He already has the t-shirt. He donated like the moment he found out that this was going to happen.
Yeah.
I haven't done any of these things. I feel very I'm uncoordinated. I feel discombobulated. I don't know what to do at this point.
Yeah.
But so we now have a far left candidate in the race.
Right.
We have someone to press Hillary on free trade. We have someone to press Hillary on Citizens United. We have someone to press her on Wall Street.
Yes.
The real thing that she needs to be pressed on.
Right. Well, and these are the this is what you and I have always said. You need a healthy primary. And I still, you know, I would love to think that we could live in a country that was, you know, ruled by Bernie Sanders.
Right.
Just as a, you know.
As a general rule about people.
As a king-like figure. I mean,
exactly.
I would be okay with that. But I do think that he is sort of like, win or not, is the person who sort of like, pushes her to the place that she needs to go. And I don't even think that he pushes her too far, because I don't think she'll go too far anyway.
No.
But like, also, like, he is the type of person that is going to push her in the places that she needs to get pushed in the first place.
Well, especially, this is a chance for her to talk about a lot of the issues that she's going to have to build credibility on to get the left to vote for her. Income inequality is an issue that she's not going to bring up on her own without sounding ridiculous. If he pushes her on this, she's going to talk about it. She's going to have to find a way to talk about it.
She's going to have to figure out a way to talk about it. That's exactly, you know, he's been a big, he's been on the Trans-Pacific Partnership. You know, he's been railing on that for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
She's been avoiding having to say anything about that. She's going to have to now.
Right.
So this is, again, this is why you have a primary.
Yeah, this
because
is what primaries
now
are for.
She's going to have to figure out what she thinks about things.
Yeah. And this is, I think, especially given how strong he is on income inequality. I mean, this is an issue that the Republicans are really trying to somehow make a point about, you know, and not succeeding necessarily. But Scott Walker is out there talking about this. Rick Santorum has been out there talking about this. I mean,
weird people are trying
to talk about income inequality. The Democrats really should be the people that are talking about income inequality. They're the only people with any even vague credibility on the issue. But she's just not great at it. She's not great at it yet. She doesn't have anyone to sort of like pass the baton to her.
Right.
So like if she wins the primary and Bernie Sanders has been talking about this issue with her, then he will have a chance to kind of like be like, well, I hope that she can think about X, Y, and Z because this is what her voters want to hear about income inequality. He'll have given her language to use.
Right.
Language she doesn't currently seem to know.
And he doesn't pull terribly.
No.
I mean, you know, he's obviously like 40 points behind her, but I mean, right. he sort of is like right behind Elizabeth Warren. I mean,
we're talking about someone, by the way, who is currently serving as a socialist.
That's
who
right.
doesn't? I mean,
oh yeah, he beats Joe Biden, who's our vice president in most polls. He beats Martin O'Malley, who's like the only other potential sort of like
person
people see as like a reasonable candidate
right.
who like polls at like 1% everywhere. I mean, like, you know, he polls at like 7 or 8%. I mean, that's nothing to sneeze at. And you figure that he takes, you know, 12 or 13% of Elizabeth Warren's people, and then Joe Biden doesn't even look like he's going to run at this point, and all of a sudden,
it's
50-something to 30-something, and that's something you have to deal with.
This could at least be a Zephyr Teachout moment.
I agree.
I still can't say the name with a straight face.
No,
I've been trying for, at this point, months.
Yeah.
Can't do it. But this is what she offered to that race. You know, we still have Cuomo as the governor of New York.
He's not great. But he put a moratorium on fracking.
He put a moratorium on fracking because Zephyr Teachout talked about it in the primary.
Right.
That's what
he had to.
You know, that's what we can hope for out of a Bernie Sanders primary. Is it the strong candidate that we would want to hope for? You know, with Liz Warren, we were hoping for someone who could maybe even beat Hillary Clinton in the primary.
I don't think he is that.
He's not that candidate. But he is someone who's going to be able to raise the profile of the issues that she's going to need to talk about to attract the Democratic base voters. And that's at least something.
Yep.
For people that were looking at the Democratic field and thinking to ourselves, well, wow, this is
bleak.
Shitty.
No.
Yeah, this is at least something.
Yeah, agreed.
So that's exciting and a great birthday present for Brent. And if you want to give him another birthday present, you can donate to his AIDS lifecycle run.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, the reason that we're a couple days late is because
Brent's been on these horrible training
rides. I rode my bike 160 miles this weekend,
guys. That's too many miles.
That's more
miles than a person should ride on their bicycle.
But if you don't know what the AIDS life cycle is, it's a 7-day, 545-mile ride, and it's a big fundraiser for the Los Angeles Gay and Lesbian Center. And I have raised like $3,700, but I will take any more money that you would like to give me.
Yeah.
It's easy. You just go to AIDSLifeCycle.org and you can find my name on there and then you give me money.
Yeah.
So do that.
Do that,
my shameless plea for money.
He still
right
might
there.
Die on this horrible sounding bike ride. Also, here's what sounds terrible about it to me:
the camping. Yeah,
that sounds like a nightmare. I was talking about it with someone else that we know, and they were like, "Is he gonna have to camp?" And I was like, "Well, you don't have to camp, but like you can." And I think he's going to.
Yeah.
And they were like, "Well, that's how you sell me on not doing it right there."
Right.
I mean, that's not what you want.
You can princess it.
That's what they call it. Of course, you can't do that on a 7-day athletic event. Princessing it is not something you can do.
No, I know.
It sounds terrible.
Yeah.
Also, soft sexism.
Oh, that's right. Yes.
I just launched a website.
No, I know. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, princessing it is an example of soft sexism.
We're in the random point in the podcast
where we are plugging
our own things, like in the middle.
I will say a lot of podcasts do this right at the top, and they spend like 10 minutes doing it, and it's very
annoying,
and no one wants to listen. So sorry about that.
Right. We made you listen to the Bernie Sanders story, and now we're going to spend 10 minutes talking about plugging things.
But I have just launched a website called softsexism.com. It's literally just www.softsexism.com.
It's really good,
and it's going to be. It's funny, and it needs listeners, and I mean listeners. It needs viewers. It needs shares. There are little infographics to go
eyeballs,
along with all the things.
It needs eyeballs.
Exactly.
Right.
And there's we're also on Instagram and Pinterest because there's little visual things. But I'm excited about it, so go check that out as well.
Mm-hmm.
Moving on, the big story of today, and actually I think maybe
the last
good,
couple days or
yeah, the last couple anyway, days, but a good reason for us to have waited to do the podcast, which was not related to this story, but at least gave us some closure.
Yep.
On this story. As you maybe know, there have been riots in Baltimore.
Yes.
It began because this 25-year-old guy, Freddie Gray, died in a paddy wagon of a spinal injury.
Like,
literally went into the paddy wagon healthy and left with, like, a severed spine or something ridiculous.
Wasn't wearing a seatbelt.
Was not wearing a seatbelt.
Which is against the law.
Right, which is against the law.
Car, right.
And died. And so, and you know, was in there for, like, unlawful possession of, like, a knife or something. It was something that was not that... It was not worth a death.
No.
He was not super violent or anything like that. It wasn't anything
had,
like that.
He had no, fled, but again...
He had fled,
sort of
like,
but, like, that's, like, one of those things where, like, you hear, you know, all of the people who are sort of like, well, he did this, well, he did this, well, he did this, but
like,
it's sort of like, but
the
then you still
don't get
the... police
are chasing you, like, your first instinct is to flee, especially if you are a black man.
Well, right, and it's also, like, even if you have fled the police, like...
You don't deserve to die for that.
You don't die. Like, that's the punishment for fleeing the police is not death by police. Like,
that's not it.
Like, that's just not how, like, our laws work in America. Like, that's just not a thing.
But so they were having peaceful protests for a while, but the protests turned violent on, I think, Sunday, Monday, kind of.
Right. Well, it was after the funeral.
It was after the funeral, yeah. They had, I think the funeral was on Sunday or Saturday. Mm-hmm. And so, and then
the had been a lot of protests, and they were
It had been going on for like a week.
Non-violent. Right, yeah.
So, in any case, it has given us a chance to not only discuss how we really should stop killing unarmed black people.
Again.
It's relaunched the Black Lives Matter hashtag that we apparently have to relaunch once a month because this keeps happening.
Yeah.
But also has given us a chance to really analyze the way in which media covers these events. At least that's what I've seen a lot of in terms of how these riots were covered.
I agree.
You know, there were 144 vehicle fires. There were 15, like, structure fires and, like, 200 arrests. There were injured police officers, of course.
Right.
And those are all terrible things. But the sort of, like, overblown coverage of the riots that focused more on the property damage than, like, lives was sort of alarming. And I think it was alarming to a lot of people. So it really did launch a discussion, at least online, about, you know, how you know, it's easy to say, like, it's easy to say that protests should be peaceful. It's easy to throw a Martin Luther King quote on that and then be like, these people are terrible. But it also is, like, easy, I think, if you're looking to see how a riot like this transpires. And this is in a city where the police force, I think, is sort of largely aware of these issues.
Totally.
It's not like we're talking about the Deep South.
No.
And, you know?
And also, this is one of those things where, you know, in terms of how it was getting covered, at the same times that these riots were going on, there were, you know, there were nonviolent protests of, like, 30,000 people, you know, happening sort of, like, at the State House, where, but, you know, nobody cared about
that. No one reports the numbers of those protests.
Right, exactly. And then also, not only that, but I think that it's, you know, it's important to remember that, yes, these riots were terrible, and there was a lot of looting, and there were things like, you know, that going on. But I think so often, you know, this gets tied to sort of, like, oh, you know, the black thugs were out there rioting and stuff like that. And we sort of, you know, as I have pointed out before, you know, like, there was looting and rioting in Kentucky after the Kentucky Wildcats lost their game in the NCAA tournament this year.
You know,
when the New York Giants won the World Series last year, like, cars, like, got overturned and, like,
basically
buildings
every time the Lakers win anything, we have a riot in LA.
So, and I'm not saying that, like, that makes the riots right, but again, it sort of, like, goes back to, like, how we cover things. Like, it's just sort of like,
that's not how those events get covered.
It was all these black people that were rioting.
Right, like, no one is talking about, like, all these white sports fans rioting. Like, that is not how those events get covered.
It's not.
You know, there's never that implication to those riots.
Correct.
And we would know because there's a fucking Lakers riot, I feel like, every 5 minutes.
Yeah, exactly. So
Lakers fans are rowdy.
Right. So don't riot, but also cover the rioting better.
Right. Well, yeah. And also, I mean, people don't riot because it's super fun.
Well, right, exactly.
That's the other thing.
Don't have a reason to riot.
Right. Riots always come from a place of anger about something else. So, like, this is, I think, understandably a very frustrating event for a city to grapple with, as it was in Ferguson, as it was in New York, you know, as it has been in all of these situations. And so it really isn't, like, the message should not be like, well, these people are ruining the message by rioting. The message should be like, what can we do to stop people from needing to riot all the time?
Exactly.
Like, this should not, we don't want riots. People don't want to riot.
Right.
People aren't just, like, trying to riot for the shits and giggles of rioting.
No, there's not random riots
going on.
There's
not random riots going on. Riots come from a place of frustration and disenfranchisement and all of these other things.
Yep.
So, like, this is a part of what you need to do in covering a riot is sort of cover why the riot's happening, just that the riot is happening.
To get to the root problem
of the riot. Yeah. Anyway,
nobody cares about the root problem.
No, not...
It's too hard to deal with.
It's too hard to come up with.
Especially when there's cars burning. Research. Because that's exciting.
That's good television.
That's right.
You know? a historical, you know, documentary about the sort of legacy of disenfranchisement in Baltimore. Snooze fest. Car burning. Yeah. Someone throwing a trash can into a police car.
That's what you're looking
for. That's good television.
That's right.
And that is why television news is sort of inherently flawed in certain respects.
Yeah.
Anyway, Larry Hogan, the governor of Maryland, declared a state of emergency, I think, on Monday evening. And the National Guard got deployed.
Right.
And
there's a curfew now.
They shut down the schools. They also shut down the buses. I was hearing a lot of reports of school kids riding because they couldn't get home, basically. That's, you want to make sure the kids can get home.
Yeah.
but then also, there were some very adorable stories from today of people in Baltimore coming together to clean up.
To clean up, I know. Yeah.
They were like very sweet stories of like kids and their brooms, cleaning the neighborhood. Anyway, that was sort of sweet to see. You never see that part. I felt like because everyone felt so guilty about how the riots got covered, they went out of their way to cover the cleanup. Also, I feel like Baltimore might be the kind of community-oriented, folksy kind of town where they all come together to clean up after a riot.
Maybe.
I feel like that's what I think of when I... Like, Baltimore is like one of the... It's like halfway between being like a D.C.-style city and like a Detroit-style city.
Right.
Like, it's sort of a mess. There is sort of no economy, but it sort of exists on the outskirts of D.C., so there's like a certain amount of like stuff happening there.
Everything I learned about Baltimore, I learned in Hairspray.
Oh, sure. I was going to say, most of what people know about Baltimore is from The Wire. As you might imagine, that was too stressful for me to watch.
Yeah, no, didn't watch
that. But in any case, I feel like I have friends who live in Baltimore, and it sounds sort of adorable there.
Okay.
So, great. You know, there's that. Rand Paul has a theory about why these riots happened.
Always does.
Always does. Lack of fathers.
Oh,
he would know because his son just got a DWI.
Oh, he did?
Yes, last week. So he was on Laura Ingraham, as he would be.
Sure.
And was talking about the Freddie Gray situation and said, the thing is that really there's so many things we can talk about. It's something we talk about not in the immediate aftermath, but over time. The breakdown of the family structure, the lack of fathers, the lack of a sort of moral code in our society.
Like what?
That's not the problem here.
That was not the why the people
a
were
lack
rioting.
Of moral code and fathers is not why people are rioting.
No, it's not.
And I mean, I see his effort to sort of tie this to the incarceration rate, and like...
And he did say it wasn't a racial thing, so God bless him, but I mean...
But that wasn't... That's not the implication of what he's saying. I mean, you can say you're not being racist after you make a racist joke, but that doesn't make you not racist.
Right, when you say it's a father's thing, like...
Like, there's an implication that you're...
directing it at a...
Making.
Yes.
And especially because he is sort of... is someone who is trying to kind of take this incarceration rate situation and run with it, so he's been talking a lot about... this sort of, like, other end of the no fathers issue, which is that black men are ending up in jail in much higher rates than is necessary and also
I feel like if he would have added that on to the no fathers thing,
then
like, that
maybe we would have at least had a logical conversation had about it, but that's...
He didn't get there. That's too much for the Laura Ingraham show. And those listeners can't handle that.
No. And anyway, he maybe is not someone to be talking about fathers at this exact moment.
Exactly.
But... in exciting news, and better news for everyone.
Finally.
We finally have an attorney general.
Oh my gosh.
Who is not Eric Holder.
That's right.
I mean, I loved Eric Holder.
I was going to say.
I feel fine about Eric Holder being the... But he didn't want to be the attorney general anymore.
No, he was trying to leave.
And the Republicans hated him. So, Loretta Lynch is finally our attorney general.
There
we did it.
Yeah.
It's our first African-American woman attorney general.
That's right.
So, we did that too.
Yes,
we did. And she was confirmed last week, as we know, but was finally sworn in on Monday.
Yep.
And, you know... There were some protest votes, but of course no one had a real reason to protest her, so they had to just let it go.
Yep.
But she said her priorities are going to be fighting crime, as they should be as the attorney general.
Thank God.
Strengthening victims' rights, combating cyber attacks, and ending modern slavery, as in sex trafficking. Mm. And so, in any case...
Interesting that it was the sex trafficking vote.
The vote that was keeping her...
holding her up to begin with.
It's an interesting... Well, and she's going to uphold all the executive actions on immigration, which is the other thing that they were really pissed about. But also, like, that's... Why would he appoint someone who wouldn't do that?
Well, see, that's the thing that is just so ridiculous. It's like...
Nonsense.
The president is not going to elect or nominate a Republican attorney general. Like,
that's
just not
how things work.
That's not life.
That's not life.
So, if she's qualified, then you have to vote for her.
Yeah.
That's it.
It's the law of the land.
That's right. Yeah.
Meanwhile, in a situation that's terrifying Angelinos left, right, and center.
Sure is.
There was a huge earthquake in Nepal.
Right.
A 7.8, that's too high.
That's too high. And the death toll of this has just
massive.
Been, like, I remember, like, I woke up, like, on Sunday morning and, like, saw that, like, on Huffington Post or something. And it was, like, literally the initial reports were, like, 750 people reported dead in Nepal. Like, and now it's, like, because there were avalanches and there was this and there was
that. Well, because
it's, like, up to, like, 10,000 now.
It's at 5,000 and they're anticipating it might reach 10,000. Because this is what happened. First of all, they had an earthquake with bad infrastructure in a country with sort of wonky political situations going on. They then had, you know, they have all these, like, people living in the mountains that are, like, impossible to get to anyway.
Right.
Then
which is why the number keeps climbing.
Which is why the number keeps climbing. Really they keep finding new people in the mountains.
Exactly.
But then also, they just had, like, nonstop rain following it. So after everything got shaken loose by the earthquake, the rain just caused all these avalanches. And then also all these, you know, they have helicopters to go to these villages, but the helicopters can't fly when it's raining, and so they can't get to anyone that way, and the aid workers are terrified, and they're trying to make sure there's enough water for people in Kathmandu, but, like,
there's not. Nations says that, like, more than 8 million people have been affected by this, just because of the, like, because all the things you're talking about.
Because the water landslides, people are homeless, they've taken 650 injured villagers back to Kathmandu for medical attention, and then I think 16 countries have sent aid, and they're expecting more, but they're going to need, like, billions of dollars to fix this, and they're probably not going to get that.
The whole,
the whole freaking country has to be rebuilt.
Yeah.
But it's sort of, you know, I think it speaks to why good infrastructure is important, but it also speaks to, I think, why a stable political situation is necessary to maintain good infrastructure.
Yeah.
Because that's part of what they lacked, is they were totally unprepared
because
there's just been, like, political chaos going on there. So.
Mm-hmm.
That's not good.
But that has the, you know, they have sort of a not necessarily recent, but I mean, this is a place in the world that can have earthquakes like this. So like, it's, you know, you sort of, it was the fact that it was as unprepared for it as it was is
sort of scary.
It's scary. Right.
Right. Yeah. That's really. Too many earthquakes going on. P.S. Especially, they seem to hit places that are unprepared with higher frequency.
Right.
Like, why did Haiti need an earthquake?
I know.
They already had to be Haiti. They started as Haiti, and then they had to have an earthquake on top of that. That's not fair.
No, it's not at all.
You shouldn't have to have both. I feel like that's what happened here.
No.
I mean, like, Nepal is supposedly beautiful, and I'm sure, you know, it's mountainous. I'm sure it's beautiful there. But, like, did they also deserve an earthquake?
Nope.
No. It's enough. It was enough.
Yeah.
In any case.
Agreed.
We also have a big SCOTUS situation happening today.
It was the gay marriage.
Yeah, the big gay marriage case with the guy whose name I can't pronounce and Hodges.
Yeah.
Obergefell? Obergefell, maybe? Yeah.
Who knows?
I've been trying to avoid saying it all day.
Yeah.
I've talked about this with multiple people and just avoided saying the name of the case. But it's sort of the case that I think will ultimately determine whether same-sex marriage is constitutionally protected or not. And they heard the oral arguments today, and then they also had a war of the signs happening outside.
Yes.
Because there were, like, 1,000 people just, like, hanging out outside the courthouse with signs. And of all sides, there were some really offensive signs out there.
Of course.
There were some signs that said things like, Scalia, marry me. and there was someone that was yelling, gay marijuana for all, which was my favorite.
Yeah, I like that.
Or someone had a sign that said, don't mess with Dumbledore's rights.
That's right, yeah.
Which is a whole situation.
Yes.
But
this is one of those ones where it's like, you know, everybody seems to sort of, look, you never know what they're going to do. Because every time that somebody thinks that they know what the Supreme Court's going to do, they end up being wrong. But most everyone seems to think that they are going to make gay marriage the law of the land due to the fact that there's an even 4-4 split. And then the fifth that you need is Kennedy. And he has written a lot of the decisions, you know, on DOMA and the
cases,
Proposition
yeah.
8. And has sort of, like, been fairly vocal. And he's really sort of, like, technically belongs to the conservative bloc.
But until they legalize this, they're going to have to keep hearing these cases over and over. Because everyone's going to find a new angle.
Right.
I mean, that's what happened here. We heard this case ultimately. already. We already decided we could have gay marriage.
Right.
That's over. Now we're deciding it again, basically, on a sort of, like, broader scale.
Right.
But, I mean, like, these cases are just going to keep coming back if they don't just
get their shit together. A lot of what I have, what I heard is that they will either make it the law of the land and say that you can't discriminate this way. Or if they figure out how to sort of, like, parse it a little bit more, they could let the state bans stand, but make states require the states to acknowledge gay marriages that happen in other states. So you don't have, like, this thing where it's like, if I get married in California and I move to someplace terrible like Arkansas, like, they can
decide that
I'm not married.
Yeah.
So
when you still are married federally,
the
federal
government
still recognizes your marriage. So, like, having the state governments not it seems unnecessarily complicated.
I agree. And nobody really thinks that that's what they're going to do.
No.
But, like, if they wanted a way out, you know, everybody is always sort of prognosticating about, like, what could they do if they really secretly wanted to do nothing?
Right.
Like, that would be what they would do if they were trying to do nothing.
Yeah, exactly.
So,
we have that.
We'll see.
People were paying to get courtroom seats, though, and stuff.
Oh, yeah.
It was, like, an exciting
scene
out there.
That seems pretty cheap, actually.
I know. I feel like, you can't even go see like a concert for that much here.
No, you can't.
I'm constantly shocked by concert prices. P.S. I feel like an old person every time I look. Like, when did things get so expensive?
I know, right? There,
someone was trying to sell Hozier tickets at my office, and I was like, oh, maybe I want to go to that.
Those
I
were, like, sold out immediately.
I couldn't afford those tickets. And it was at, like, L.A. Live or some nonsense. I'm not trying to see a stadium concert with Hozier. Like,
no.
That's
intimate.
When he was doing that church tour.
The church tour, yeah.
Mm. That would have been great. But, like, I'm not trying to sit in a stadium.
No, nobody is.
For $100 million.
No.
Not anyway. No. It's a big tangent podcast for us. We're really going for it. Yeah.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Oh, and it's about to get real tangenty towards the end.
Oh.
We have a lot of exciting topics to tell you about.
It's going
to
go off the rails. Yeah.
In any case, Rand Paul, you might remember him as a person who filibustered the U.S. having the ability to drone U.S. citizens for 13 hours.
Yeah, this was when I first thought, I might like this guy. Yeah. You know what? I don't really.
No. I mean, first of all, he's given us many reasons not to like him.
Of course.
But second of all, he was on Fox and Friends because he's now just hitting the news circuit running for president. And then it kind of backed off of his opposition to drones. He was sort of like, well, I don't think they should be used against for U.S. citizens. I'm an opponent of drones, but I think they have there's a valuable use for them. The military might need them. And like kind of like backed off the opposition to drones hard.
Right. Well, we've been having to talk about drones a lot recently because I think it was last week, and we don't necessarily have this story, but there was the we declassified some things about like this drone strike in January where we tried to take out like this, you know, Al-Qaeda compound or something, and we found out after the fact that there was like an American prisoner there and I think an Italian prisoner or something as well who were there. And so it all goes back to this sort of like, do we kill Americans with drones even if they have turned? Do they still have due process? Like, what is the sort of like, you know, how
what's
do we deal with that? So,
he
is of course the person that gets asked about drones because he's the drone filibusterer.
Right.
And so
you
now he's
filibuster
sort of like,
if you don't filibuster an issue you're not going to want to talk about later.
But remember when not long after that filibuster, he was getting asked about it, and then basically, like, declared that it would, like, if we caught somebody, like, outside of a 7-Eleven, like, he would be okay with drone striking them. Do you remember? Like, if you...
No, he basically was like, if we can catch people committing petty crimes with drones, then it's fine.
Yeah.
Which is basically what he said again here, because he was like, what if there's a kidnapping in New York and the police don't have a warrant to go in? And I was like, well, as a person who's against drones, you would be against violating the privacy of the person who kidnapped the person and not
going
without a warrant.
Isn't that like his whole shtick? Like,
that was what he said during the 13 hours he was filibustering.
I feel like he's not getting this right because I know what he's trying to do in the sense that like he's trying to win a Republican primary. But like this is his...
calling card.
This is an issue at his core. So, like,
this is a libertarian issue.
This is not the way to go for
him, I don't
think.
This is what defines him as a candidate.
And this is what makes him attractive to people who are not Tea Partiers.
Yeah.
And those are the people that he is going to need if he is going to win an election.
And
I don't think
Tea Partiers can get into this. They love freedom.
Yeah, of course.
This is a freedom thing.
Yeah, it is.
You can just bandy around the word freedom. People would believe anything.
Yeah.
I mean, he's more hardcore on the drones issue than I am. Like, that's an issue
or
that...
Or was, anyway.
But that's an issue that I think, you know, he could attract Tea Partiers on and attract his weird libertarian people that he's going to inherit from his father. And, like, then everyone wins. But he doesn't gain anything from not... Like, now he just sounds like Ted Cruz and Marco Rubio and everyone else who's running that primary where he sort of feels fine about drones. And, like, that doesn't help him distinguish himself as a candidate.
No,
so, like, what is he doing?
He just sounds like those two. One way that he can distinguish him from those two is
he's been showing up at work.
He's got a pretty good voting record.
Yeah.
And neither of the two that you just named do at all. Ted Cruz and Marco Rubio.
In fact, they have the worst voting records in
the
Senate.
The two of them.
The two of them.
Exactly.
Cruz has the highest percentage of total missed votes with 10.4%.
Didn't even show up for the Loretta Lynch one. And he's been the one who's been, like, ragging on her, like, through the entire last 5 months of this.
That's like him not showing up for the government shutdown vote. Like, that's bonkers town.
Yeah.
And then Rubio comes in second. He's missed 8.2% of the votes.
Right.
They're just, like, not coming to work.
Yeah. Like, and the only people who are worse are Mark
Kirk. People with health problems.
And he had a stroke.
Right.
And then, so we don't count him.
Right.
And then, and John McCain, who's running for president.
Well,
twice running for president. Right. So they don't count him either. So it's like, guys, you don't do better.
Do better.
Yeah. And a lot of people sort of, like, you know, think that I think on some level they think, oh, I was there for the big ones or this or that or whatever. But, like, this has really come back to bite people in the ass before, because just even recently, Bruce Braley had these allegations, like, thrown at him because he didn't have a great voting record in the House. Who else?
Kay Hagan.
Scott Brown. All of these people are people who
are not in office right now.
Right, exactly. And they really had to defend themselves on that. Obama, and I remember this, actually, I had forgotten until I was reading this, but, like, took a lot of heat in 2008 because he voted present a lot when he was in the Illinois State Senate. Like, you can't just not show up for work.
No, that's, we don't get to do that.
No.
Americans are not getting to do that in other places.
No.
Why should you, a person who we're paying the salary of, get to show up?
And also a person who probably, like, you know, rails on about, like, you know, people who are on welfare, like, not getting government to, waste. You know, and stuff like that.
You know, it's
like,
government waste? Paying someone to only show up to work 90%
of the time. 90% of the time as opposed to 100%.
Also, Ted, like, all right, your mom dies. Maybe you're going to miss a vote then. You know, there's been an avalanche in your hometown and you need to rescue your puppy. We got it. Ted Cruz missed the Loretta Lynch vote, this issue that he's been hopping on, for a fucking fundraiser.
Yeah.
That's not the right thing to do. That's not the answer.
No, it's not.
I mean, you can schedule your fundraiser for that evening and get a, like, I mean, whatever your plan is, it has to work around your job.
Well, and that's the thing too, because I had, and what he said when he was asked about this is that he said something about, like, well, my, you know, what I stand for as I'm sort of running for president is also what the people of Texas elected me to do. And on some level, like, I get sort of like that reasoning on some level, but it's like, but Rand Paul has, like, one of the best records of voting, you know?
No, so
it's
exactly.
You can do both. Like,
you are there to represent Texas in a job that has defined responsibilities that America pays for you to do.
Correct.
Texas does not pay your salary in the Senate.
No. And America doesn't pay for you to go to fundraisers and not vote on things.
Exactly. You're in the Senate to do your job as a senator and represent Texas full-time as a senator paid for by the American people. Yep. It's not like Texas determines what your work schedule is. They don't get to.
No, they don't.
Also, screw Texas and screw your fundraiser. Do it another time.
Yeah, exactly.
You get so much vacation time in the Senate. P.S. There's plenty of time for you to do early fundraisers for your presidential run.
Totally.
Ugh.
Yeah.
Anyway, speaking of drama.
Yeah. We've got, let's call this Hillary Pillory.
We haven't called anything Hillary Pillory
in a long time.
But you know
what? We're going to do
it now. Let's even do the sound effect.
Yeah.
Here it is.
All right, so you may have heard there's this book that came out last week. It's got the world's longest name. Lila had to underline it because she was like, we'll never be able to find it because it's basically like an entire paragraph. It's called Clinton Cash, The Untold Story of How and Why Foreign Governments and Businesses Helped Make Bill and Hillary Rich.
There's got to be an easier way to say that. Here's the answer. How foreign governments, or how foreign, you know, entities helped make Bill and Hillary rich.
Yeah.
Clinton Cash, How Foreign Entities Helped Make Bill and Hillary Rich.
Done. You solved it.
Solved
there it. There it is. Much snappier.
I even snapped to prove how snappy it was.
It's by this guy named Peter Schweitzer. And basically what he asserts is that foreign entities made payments to the Clinton Foundation and to Mr. Clinton through his speaking fees and then got favors from Hillary while she was in the State Department. So all of this foreign money was pouring into the Clinton Foundation, which he can prove and we know is the case because they were accepting it and they never really said that they weren't accepting
it.
What they are obviously going to say is that no favors were exchanged.
Right. He gives examples that are sort of compelling.
Right, exactly.
Free trade agreements in Colombia, there were development projects in Haiti after the earthquake that were sort of tied to entities that had given money.
Right.
There was a Canadian bank paid $1 million to Bill's foundation and was a major shareholder in Keystone.
Right, and the Keystone pipeline is being overseen by the State Department because whenever pipelines have to go. So, I mean, like, that is obviously something that she could have, you know.
I mean, certainly she didn't.
I mean, she
didn't stop it. So, like, right. I mean, I don't know. You know, like, there were sort of compelling connections at least here,
right? And so, the members of the Senate Foreign Relations Committee have already been briefed on this book. Like, this is not a fake thing. I mean, just in terms of, like, we may find that all of the findings are fake, but, like, as of right now, like, this is actually a big deal. People are taking it very seriously. So, you know. And some of the people who are on the Foreign Relations Committee are running for president.
Yeah.
They are
Rand Paul, Marco Rubio. Well, and also the Clinton Foundation had to revise its policy on who it would accept.
Well, right. Well, and that's how we know that they were doing this anyway. Whether they were doing the favors or not, I guess, is TBD. But I mean, this is, yeah, they revised their what countries they will allow to give them money, right. Basically. So, like, most countries in Europe, they'll allow, you know, Canada, the Netherlands, and Britain, and things like that. But, like, they're now not taking it from, like, any countries in the Middle East, and they're right. not taking it from any, like, you know, sort of, like...
countries probably in South America.
Right, exactly.
Stuff like that.
So, all I have to say about this is that, you know, the Clintons are obviously going to say that no favors were exchanged, and we can probably debate that until the cows come home. I don't know how compelling the actual evidence in right. this book is. And on some level, I don't ultimately care. I do in the sense that if it actually was happening, then that's bad. And, like, you can't do that. And that's probably...
If it was happening, it'll just confirm what I've always thought about them. And if it's not happening, I still think the things I think about them.
Well, and so. that's the problem.
Their problem.
This is one of those sort of, like, and we talked a lot about this when we were talking about her running her State Department email out of her fucking private email server in Chappaqua. Right. Like, it's one of those do better moments.
Right.
Like, everyone in all of the universe knew that Hillary Clinton was going to be running for president. She knew she was in the State Department. That was her job.
Right.
Like,
she was aware of that.
She knew that the foundation that had her name on it, I mean, yeah. it's now technically called the Bill Hillary and Chelsea Clinton Foundation, yeah. was taking money from all of these foreign countries. This just has to be something that, as a thinking person who
right.
is going
She's
to
like,
be running
is this
for
going
president,
to look like a conflict
like,
of interest?
Will this look bad, especially for me, whose last name is Clinton? Yes, it will. Don't do this.
Right.
Like, that's, there
like,
it is. Like,
how
this is
can
a,
I stop this problem before it starts? They right. don't seem to have that mentality.
They don't
ever.
Have that problem. And it just goes, that is a huge problem for them.
That
goes,
is also ultimately.
This
has
dogged them for decades. It's dogged them
the
since the early 90s.
This is the thing that ruins them every time. This is why we worry about her as a candidate, not just because she's too far right for us and all of those things. It's because the Clintons make these missteps where you're just like, guys, you're like the most powerful political operators in the Democratic world. Like, how are you not seeing these things coming?
Yeah.
Like, you're professionals at this.
It boggles the mind.
It boggles the mind.
Especially from Bill, who is sort of like widely known as sort of like, you know, the greatest like politician's politician, just in
right.
the sense of like being like a, you know, he's like a, he's good at being a politician, or
right.
so we think. Like, that's sort of like his thing. He likes it.
Yeah.
You know? And whether she does or not, I mean, who
it's
knows?
It's irrelevant.
I
think she's a Clinton. She's got to do what she's got to do.
But, I mean, like, it just, it seems like something that I just don't get it. I can't get it.
No. No, you can't. But this is just one of the things that I think, there's going to be a lot of these. There always are with them. The problem that they have is that they are too powerful, and so there's nothing, a lot of these things don't just sort of like make us think like, could you please do better, but also confirm deep-seated things that people already think about them.
Right, exactly. And whether they're true or not.
Doesn't matter.
You know, it does matter. It's
irrelevant,
right.
because
right.
them being true or not is not the point. It's the fact that we're having to worry already sort of paints the problem, because the problem is them being too insidery and
right.
too
playing
powerful,
by their own set of rules,
playing by their own set of rules, and that problem is the thing that derails them. It's not whether or not these things are true,
right? And it's not her policy positions.
No, who cares about her policy positions?
I mean, we do,
but I mean, like, that's not what derails
don't.
Her.
No, exactly.
What that's what gets people unexcited about her.
Sure,
that was what prevents them from having people protecting them. But like,
right. yeah.
it's not what derails her.
No, it's not. Oh, God, this is a good story.
Oh, my God.
So, on the floor of the State House in Oklahoma, this just, I'm picturing things like this happening all the time there, by the way.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah. So, there's this Republican, his name's Kevin Calvey, and he recently threatened to leave the building, walk across the street, and to the state Supreme Court, pour gasoline on himself, and light himself on fire in a suicide protest against, wait for it, a 6% raise for court employees. So, now, you might be thinking to yourself, wait a minute.
You are thinking to yourself.
Really? That's what he's railing on against? A 6%? Is he just like a fiscal conservative? Does he think 6% is too high? No. There's a more ridiculous reason to it.
It's a reason that's so ridiculous it makes you wonder why no one was just like, go ahead.
Right.
Why not?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Do what you need to do.
Here's the gasoline.
Exactly.
Here's the tank. Yeah.
If you need a match, call me.
Yeah. No, he's so vehemently against it because he's really mad at the judicial you know, system, basically, of striking down several laws restricting abortion.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Makes him want to just set himself on fire.
It all goes back to abortion.
Unfortunately, he can't because he's a Christian.
Yes, that's what he said. He went on this whole big, long, crazy tirade, basically, where he was like, I'll go over and douse myself in gasoline and set myself on fire to protest the evil that is going on over there, killing, giving the death penalty to the will of the people and the will of this body and protecting the least among us. Right, like,
but I don't believe in suicide.
So, and then he said, so what I'm left with is, and then he sort of like trails off, and this voice off camera interrupts him and said, and calls on Brian, another person, to take the floor and said, would you please ask the representative to stay on subject of the matter, please? Oh boy. So, and this guy has a little bit of a colorful past. Yeah, this is not the first time that he's been up to some crazy shenanigans, because previously, in 2010, he urged fellow elected officials not to attend the Council on American Islamic Relations, Oklahoma chapter's annual banquet at the National Cowboy and Western Heritage Museum in Oklahoma City. And the reason is
very compelling.
Not because it was at the Cowboy and Western Heritage Museum in Oklahoma City, which would be the reason that I would not go. Right. But no, the reason is because he has repeatedly expressed concerns that this group is a front organization for Hamas. That has taken hold in Oklahoma City.
At the Cowboy and Western Heritage Museum.
What an idiot.
And then he also in February championed legislation that would make it illegal to arrest any state official accused of a public offense.
What?
It's a convenient one, isn't it?
Right, well, he's really worried about, like, all of these lawsuits against Rick Perry, you know?
Yes.
That he thinks are sort of, like, there's nothing to, so he just, you know, he doesn't want to get arrested for doing something.
Literally are above the law now.
That's right. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. He doesn't want to get arrested for something stupid that he shouldn't have been doing.
Right.
God, anyway. Meanwhile, in actual comedy news, the White House Correspondents' Dinner was this week.
Yeah. This thing is nuts, by the way.
Oh, my God. Like, every time, it boggles my mind.
Always kills it, but it's like, why is this happening?
Why is he forced to deliver a stand-up routine?
What is going on
once a year?
Yeah. I mean, this is the sort of thing that, like, used to be, like, you know, it's called the White House Correspondents' Dinner because it sort of, like, used to be a time where the White House correspondents would come and then get to, it would be sort of like just a fun evening for the actual correspondents. Yeah. But now it's like, it's celebrities, it's everyone from every single news station, like, on Earth. And it's like, you know, it's thousands of people, it's comedians, it's Obama has to do a sketch with, what's his name? Peele or whichever, one. Right. Yeah.
Of Key and Peele.
And it's fun, certainly, but it's like, it's one of those things where
it's only fun also when you have a cool president.
Well, right, yeah.
Can you imagine Poppy Bush having to deliver one of these speeches? Because I certainly can.
I'm sure he did.
Yeah. But what did he say?
Sure, it was terrible.
I could see Bill doing it, but
I'm sure somebody wrote funny things for him to say. That's the thing about Obama, is that he, like, actually really does.
He can deliver the lines.
Like,
yeah.
He could, you know, he could be on SNL. Like, right. If he was, just, you know, I don't trust him to write his own material necessarily in terms of comedy. But I mean, like, he's got good timing.
Yeah, he's got good timing.
Yeah.
Some of his funny lines include, I look so old, John Boehner's already invited Netanyahu to speak at my funeral. That was my favorite. Uh-huh.
That's good, yeah.
For many Americans, this is still a time of deep uncertainty. For example, I have a friend, just last year she was making millions of dollars. She's now living out of a van in Iowa. Hillary Clinton hilarious joke. This week, Michelle Bachmann actually predicted that I would bring about the biblical end of days. Now, that's a legacy. That's big. I mean, Lincoln, Washington, they didn't do that. It turns out Jeb Bush identified himself as Hispanic in 2009. Look, I understand. It's an innocent mistake. Reminds me of when I identified myself as American back in 1961. he did this sketch with Key and Peele that was an anger translator.
Which was actually really
sketch, which was a big
funny.
Yeah.
Because it was just, also, that was really good with his timing. Because basically what he was doing is he would say something and then, like, Key was behind him. And then he would, like, get really enraged and say, like, what it was that, like, Obama, like, actually wished that he would have wanted to say. But then the sort of, like, punchline of the whole bit was that Obama, like, really at the end of the thing actually got incensed. And it was, like, about climate change was the thing that he got incensed about. So it was actually really funny and sort of poignant.
Impactful.
Too, because it, yeah, and then, like, Key is back there and he was like, whoa, dude, like, you don't need me anymore. Yes. And, like, and then he just sort of, like, kept going and, like, talking about how stupid people who didn't agree with climate change, you know, the climate deniers. So that was a good one.
Mm-hmm. And then Cecily Strong was the host, so she also had to deliver a speech where she digged into the Secret Service a little, right. among others. She also, she had that line that is being widely repeated about, like, can you imagine, like, you know, I wouldn't come here and tell you to do, how to do your job. Can you imagine? It's like you coming and telling me what to do with my own body or, you know, that line has been making the rounds. And then the one that I think sort of sums up the whole event is the Correspondence Dinner is a chance to unwind, relax, and laugh as soon as you notice someone more powerful than you is laughing. Because that's what makes this so fascinating is figuring out, these are all people that have no sense of humor, P.S. Yeah. It's like people that are, you know, actual, you know, Hollywood celebrity types who have a sense of humor, maybe. But they're forced to, like, sit in this awkward room while people are making political jokes about people that are also sitting in the room.
Yeah.
And, like, everyone is just awkwardly trying to figure out who's laughing.
Uh-huh.
That's
And oftentimes there are a lot of people who never laugh. Yeah. Wolf Blitzer.
Not a laugher.
Didn't laugh. There was, like, a sort of, like, a supercut of him, like, responding to all of the jokes with, like, you know, stone
scowls.
Face, basically. Yeah.
But, yeah, so she had some good zingers. We can... They're all available all over the internet, so we don't need to read them all.
I love the Rand Paul one. She's saying Rand Paul has announced that he's taking over the family's not being president business.
And the other one that is getting a lot of play is, I don't want to be too hard on, for the Secret Service she's talking about, I don't want to be too hard on these guys because they're the only law enforcement agency in the country that will get in trouble if a black man gets shot.
That's true. Yes.
Mm-hmm. So, in any case. And now... Pop culture news.
Yes.
Because that was a good segue into pop culture news. But here's what was really happening in America last week.
Right.
The Bruce Jenner interview.
Yeah, like 20 million people were watching the Bruce Jenner interview.
More people...
Did you watch it?
I watched half of it.
You did? I'm surprised that you watched half of it.
I was at a party where they were watching it. I would not have watched it otherwise.
Was this like a Super Bowl type event or something?
No, I was at a birthday party and it was supposed to be a games night. And then I walk in and everyone's watching the Bruce Jenner interview and I was like, oh... I guess that's what we're doing.
Yeah, well, sort of like a game or something. I don't know.
Yeah. Maybe. And I was there when he came out as a Republican.
Oh, you were there for that. Yeah, that was in the second.
And I was like losing my shit. And everyone was like, what are you doing?
I
was like...
Your mom commented and wrote a haiku about it, I think.
I was sitting around while everyone was acting super casual about that. And I was like, my mom's going to lose her shit over this.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
She did. But yeah, so... And it also... He got rave reviews over the whole thing.
Well, I think that... He was great. And I think that he, you know, sort of, I think was, like, mostly humble in it. Just in the sense that, like, you know, you sort of, you think about, you really, most people, at least our age anyway, only think of him in the context of keeping up with the Kardashians. I mean, a lot of people have, you know, memories of him, you know, winning an Olympic gold medal in the decathlon and, you know, being the world's greatest athlete and being on Wheaties boxes and stuff, but... We don't have that context.
No.
So, I mean, it's sort of... And, you know, and this is also a thing that, like, he's been sort of, like, getting made fun of for a while just because he hasn't really been out with it, you know? So I think that, like, there were a lot of people who are...
Right, his appearance has been changing.
There were a lot of people who were, like, sort of, I think, suspect of sort of this. And I... the other thing that I found so interesting about this is that he has really... And not that I ever... distrusted him, because I don't think that you would go through with this. Like, this is not one of those things that, like, you do as a publicity stunt. Like, even no matter who you are, even if you're a Kardashian, like, you don't decide to change your sex, I don't think. But, I mean, like, you know, this has been something that he's really, truly struggled with for a long time. He started taking hormones in the 80s.
Right, and then he stopped because he was worried about embarrassing his family and whatever.
Yeah, exactly. So, I mean, like, this is very real for him, and I think you got that sense. And I think I think ABC did a really good job with it, too, and Diane Sawyer did a good job. She didn't really get into the sort of, like, you know, mechanics of the whole thing, you know. Katie Couric caught a lot of flack when she interviewed him.
She repeatedly tried to ask him if he would continue to date women.
Right, date women. And
Diane Sawyer asked him, like, three times.
That's true. But, you know, like, Katie Couric was, like, would not let him go without telling her whether he was going to get a, you know, penis whacked off, basically. Right. Like, and so, like, you know, everybody was, they didn't really get, they sort of touched on those things, but, like, it was done, like, in a good way. Didn't... There were a lot of, like, teachable moments, too. Like, they really sort of, like, made sure
it was,
sure
like, one long after-school special.
Right, they really made...
He was even in a Mr. Rogers voice the whole time.
He was.
I was, like, shocked by how Mr. Rogers-y he sounded.
But they really sort of, like, tried to make clear the difference between, you know, gender and sexuality. They talked to psychologists. They talked to, like, people who, like, you know, work with, like, children who are, like, you know, struggling with, like, feeling like they are transgender. And so it was just the whole... And at first I was like, oh, God, this fucking thing is going to be 2 hours. Come on. But, like, that didn't bother me, I guess. I don't know. I really liked it.
It was very long.
It was long. But I liked it. I enjoyed it.
I enjoyed the part that I watch while noting how long it was.
Sure. Yeah.
And I It's like still hard in my mind to sort of like disconnect him from the Kardashian.
Well, I think that's a problem that thing. So many people have.
And it, because of that, I like he. It was obvious. Like he did as good a job as he could to create some credibility for himself.
Yeah.
In this interview, where he seemed like a genuine person who was yeah. like genuinely thinking thoughts. Yeah. And it's still like so hard to like fully sort of like accept that perspective.
Yeah.
Because he's part of this family that is just famous for doing wacky nonsense.
Right, exactly.
Like that, and so I feel like there was sort of like a weird, I think, kind of split reaction to this interview from, I mean, I was just sort of like following on Twitter because I wanted to see what people were saying about sure. the Republican bit.
Oh, yeah.
Right. And so, and you know, there was a lot of just sort of like out and out support. There was a lot of discussion about how sort of like tepid the support from his family was, which I think you can probably get why this is hard for them.
Sure.
I don't think it would be, you know, as much as you want to believe that you would just be like, sure, dad, be a woman and love it. Like,
yeah.
that's not how you would actually react in, yeah. you know,
and some of his kids shock. Were there and
right.
they interviewed him with his sister.
Right, the Jenner end. Kids were there. The right, Kardashian exactly. Jenners were
right, but
not
supposedly
there.
He claims that Kim is the best one. She didn't have a statement, I
right.
guess, though. But
yeah,
I mean,
Khloé
like,
is the
know.
Worst one.
Right.
Poor Khloé.
Yes. And she did have a statement.
Right. But there, think, and Chris right? had but a statement, I mean, like, but they were sort of tepid statements, like,
right.
good
and
work.
And he said only nice things about Chris, yeah. which I found interesting. And you can sort of, again, acknowledge why, like, you know, I mean, like, that's not the person that she married any longer. I do.
Right.
I actually, the one person who I know who has sort of been through this process has a very similar story.
Story.
And he is
yeah.
actually, well, she is still married to her wife.
Oh,
and is in her 60s, which is interesting. So that can be done, I sure. know, but, like, you know, you can sort
that's,
of,
yeah,
you can get it.
But that's, I mean, like, I felt like it was sort of the best that he could have done in the context of being himself.
Yes.
Advocating for this issue.
Yeah.
I wish he hadn't come out as a Republican.
I know.
I was sort of like, I don't care what gender you want to be, but don't announce on television that it's okay to be a Republican.
I know.
That's not what the kids should be listening to.
No.
That's, mm-hmm. but it was also in... Speaking of news about being a Republican, one of the things that Diane Sawyer asked him was, what do you think these upcoming presidential candidates would think about this?
Yeah.
And he was like, oh, I think that I could talk to, like, Ted Cruz and Marco Rubio and Rand Paul about this.
You can't.
Well, here's something that happened last week as well. There was a gay businessman in New York who hosted a fundraiser for Ted Cruz and, like, yeah. had to apologize.
Yeah.
He just got, like, reamed.
Yeah, the mafia...
The mafia came after him, as they should have, because
yeah.
he wasn't aware of Ted Cruz's positions on gay rights issues. Come on.
Like, that's the thing. Like, the mafia should have come after him, and anybody with a brain should have come after him.
This was not just the mafia. This was just, like, all of people who have thoughts were
right.
like, what the fuck,
Are
man?
Are you an idiot? Yeah,
yes.
exactly.
He's an actual idiot.
Yes.
This is a living, breathing idiot. But this
that's
was,
right.
I think,
flesh.
A funny story to have in the context of this Bruce Jenner interview. Because Bruce Jenner was like, oh, I think he would totally be accepting. And I was like, there was a gay guy that literally had to apologize this week for throwing a Ted Cruz fundraiser because, and Ted Cruz was distancing himself from the guy.
Yeah.
He wasn't even like, oh, I welcome the support of anyone. He was like, no.
Nope.
You keep your support. Like, he didn't want to have anything to do with it either.
No.
So I was like, good luck, Bruce Jenner, with that.
Yeah. But this guy was like, oh, I showed poor judgment and I didn't do my homework on his record. It's like, you don't have to do your homework.
You just have
no
to be
homework. You have to be alive.
It's one of the few things that everyone knows about Ted Cruz.
That's right.
That you don't have to know, you know, how
That's
many
it.
Chihuahuas he has or any sort
nope.
of specific, you know,
Anything.
What his relationship with his mother is like. Mm-mm. These are not things you need to know in order to know.
You don't even have to know he's from Canada.
Nope. Or Texas, for that matter. You
nope.
literally don't need to know anything to
no.
know this.
That's right.
But so in any case, it also got me thinking about maybe... how it's good to be open-minded, but it's okay to hate people that are going through transitions for saying stupid things. Sometimes I don't think I like Bruce Jenner. Even I respect his.
Oh yeah, of course. Nobody's expecting
I
you to
respect
sort of like,
his sort of mission.
Yeah, of course.
Here,
and you, yeah, you can respect his
like
mission.
Him.
You hope that on some level his mission is successful in the sense that he really is trying to do
wish
something good.
Ill will
that.
On anyone,
of course,
but he
like,
seems to wish ill will on me. Right. That's what I think is the thing, the message that I always take when people announce that they're Republicans that I think that they don't understand about
yeah.
what I'm thinking.
Yeah.
It's like, you are announcing your sort of like an ideology that excludes me.
Yeah.
And then this was so funny because it's in the context of him also sort of like giving this interview where I'm supposed to sort of like open my mind to him. And he's
right.
like then announcing that he wants to exclude me.
It's a good thing he's rich enough to be able to pay for those hormones himself.
Exactly.
Because
You know who's not? Everyone else.
Right. And you know which party wouldn't want him to have him.
Mm-hmm. It's not ours.
It's the one that he belongs to.
Exactly.
That's the one.
I know.
Yeah.
That's the hypocrisy really got to me there.
Yeah.
I was.
I get it.
I was angry about that for.
I feel you.
For minutes. Then I was like, why did I watch this interview?
Yeah. You know what? I was not necessarily angry about, but like
crying ugly tears about.
I was talking with our friend Lauren actually about this because she knew that I was watching it, and I was like, how's it going over there? And I was like, I'm ugly crying right now. And she goes, take a picture. And so I did. I mean, but you know, we love to talk about Grey's Anatomy on here. And that was the other sort of like big pop culture news last week was finally.
R.I.P. Derek Shepherd.
Derek Shepherd, he died.
He died.
What happened?
Didn't see that coming. Guys? The man had signed a contract for next year.
Right.
So we were all
we saw it coming in the sense that you and
I
were always
on the
like,
show anymore.
Where is he this season?
Right. He doesn't seem to be around. He seems to be around the world. I've seen him in L.A. many times. He seems to have a lot of time. I'm seeing him a lot.
Yeah.
I got introduced to him the other day.
Oh, that's right.
He's a very nice guy. I mean, he was very polite. I mean, I don't know if he's a nice guy, but he was very polite.
Is his hair as nice in person as it is on television?
He is one of the few people who I think Joe Biden would also be like this, where, like, you know that he has a charming smile, but it is, like, a really charming smile
the
in person.
Real winner.
Yeah. Like, you don't... You would not otherwise... You'll just be, like, looking around at the world, and you'll be like, who is that man with that very charming smile?
Uh-huh.
And it's Patrick Dempsey.
Got it.
He's winning on that count.
Yeah.
But, he just, like... And it's so funny because he has a reputation for being very nice, sort of like out in the world and being like a responsible person.
Well,
but he's getting a lot of the news is that he was not seeing eye to eye with the Grey's producers.
Right.
That much.
And also the word on the street is that he and Ellen Pompeo like could
hate
basically
each other.
Hardly stand to be.
Well,
the
she's
same
apparently
room with each other.
A horrible
she's
human
difficult.
Being.
Difficult.
Yeah. I mean, she's the number one sort of on that show. So
right.
Like,
she's the you don't kill off.
You
Gray.
Can't kill off Gray.
You
no.
just don't. I mean, they've killed off other Grays.
They've killed off literally everyone else on the show.
Right. Yeah.
I'm racking my brain to think of an original cast member.
Shonda wrote that one.
Right.
Actually. It was
you know who didn't watch
good.
It? Me, a person who doesn't watch those. I don't like to watch those tearjerker episodes of Grays. I didn't watch the plane crash episode.
Oh, yeah.
I haven't watched a lot of episodes, as you might.
I know.
I only watch episodes when Brent's there so I can make comments to them to him about it.
It was hard. It was... good. It was
I don't
well
like
done. It was
when
sad.
People die on television. If they go away, that's fine.
Yeah.
Then there's the hope they'll come back.
Sure.
But death is hard enough in real life. I don't need fictional people that I like dying also.
Right.
It's too hard.
Yeah.
But so that was the big pop culture news of the week.
That's right. And we had to cover it.
And we had to
cover
it
because
we
Anatomy.
Love to cover Grey's Anatomy. Yeah. Who's left on that show that's an original cast member? Karev?
Uh-huh. Bailey.
Bailey.
The Chief.
The Chief.
Grey.
And Grey. And that's it.
Sarah Ramirez wasn't original.
No.
She's been a lot on
she
for
was
a long
on,
time.
From season two on, I
Got
think.
It. Okay.
She was not an original cast member.
No.
And I hated
and
her character for years.
Yeah.
By the way.
Yeah.
It takes them a while to find their rhythm with these people.
Yeah.
New people are always having a hard time getting adjusted to this.
Yeah.
Because she was a really annoying character for a
she
long
totally
time.
Was.
And now she's
yeah.
the one holding it together, basically.
Well, she was married to T.R. Knight.
Oh, yeah. That was the least believable.
Yeah.
That was...
She's back to dating men now, though.
Oh, she is.
Mm-hmm.
Didn't hear about that.
Yeah,
haven't been watching.
Yeah,
mm-hmm. Oh, well.
One of her patients, obviously.
Obviously, as you put, it's people are. Well, you have to date someone in that hospital because the only reason you're there is to have sex with some random person.
That's right.
That's why you show up at work.
Yep.
So that's the news this week.
Yeah.
We'll be back next week with hopefully
more news of Bernie
more news
Sanders
of Bernie
impending.
Sanders impending victory.
Victory. Yeah, exactly.
At least victory in our minds.
That's right.
So we'll see you next week.
Bye.
Bye.